This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3409 for Thursday, the 26th of August 2021. Today's show is entitled Linux in Laws S01E37, all about Hacker Public Radio, and is part of the series Linux in Laws. It is hosted by Monochromic and is about 96 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is an interview with Ken Fallon, janitor at Hacker Public Radio.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
This is Linux in Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mom! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35 or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusty guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. Welcome to Linux In-Laws Season 1, Episode 37. Martin, how are things?
Things are great. We got another great guest tonight.
Yes, we do. Why don't you introduce yourself, Kenan, for the few people who do not know you?
I'm Ken Fallon. I'm one of the janitors at HPR, Hacker Public Radio. And I'm on to talk to you tonight about Hacker Public Radio in a paid sponsorship deal.
Needless to say, dear listeners, Hacker Public Radio is the platform that boosted a small independent podcast by the name of Linux In-Laws over a year ago to its current fame and fortune. So we have been loyal to Hacker Public Radio since its very beginning, as in the beginning of something called linuxinlaws.eu. So tonight we're going to explore what this platform is all about.
So Hacker Public Radio is a podcast that is releases one show every weekday, Monday through Friday, on any topic that is of interest to hackers.
That sounds interesting.
That we've managed to scrape Linux in Laws under that.
And we are more than grateful for this, Ken. Okay, you touched on a very interesting subject from the start. Before we go into other interesting topics like the history of Hacker Public Radio, why don't you explain a little bit about the philosophy and why this is not necessarily bound to tech subjects?
Well, it's of interest to hackers is a nice catch-all, really, for what's of interest to hackers. Because what I found interesting down through the years is every show is uniquely different. And sometimes that might be somebody reading the 802.86 instruction set. That's definitely of interest to hackers. But equally, we had a show where a guy strapped on an MP3 player onto his hat, went for a swim down a river in France, went as far as the weir, turned and swam back. And that was of interest to hackers. So the amount of feedback you get from shows, is it interesting or not? So yeah, it's been a good barrier. It encompasses the technical aspect, but it also encompasses the friendly aspect that you're sitting down listening to, you know, somebody servicing the car or fixing their bike or painting their house or cleaning the gutters. These have all been shows of people are just chatting. So you have the kind of hackerspace feel as well to it, but equally you have the important messages, you know, they're in the period of time we've done, tried to do some social work as well to, you know, put forward messages of internet censorship and the like. So whatever it is, if it's of interest to hackers.
Full disclosure, I first came across Hacker Public Radio ages ago on something called Floss Weekly. I don't know if you remember the episode. I think it was you, but it might have been somebody else talking to when Randall was still around, as in Randall Schwartz, the second person running that podcast. And I can't remember who it was, basically, but somebody mentioned that there was actually an episode on somebody talking about his or her experiences in a mental ward of a hospital.
Yeah. And that was an interesting episode. And, you know, thankfully, as far as I know, they're doing a lot better right now. So that's great. But, you know, that's an experience that you're not going to, that you're maybe not going to think is going to be of interest to hackers, but yeah, turns out to be an experience. We've quite a fairly hefty series on mental health issues and other things like accessibility and such, but the mental health issue series is a popular one. And you know, if anybody listens to this is feeling a bit down, no harm to go have a listen to some of those and reach out to us here on the network. We're happy to check in on you and see everything is doing okay.
Is that still running, that series?
Yeah. Okay. Any series is running, so you know, some okay. some series go quiet for a while and then they come back to life. So yeah, it is what it is.
Okay. Why don't you explain a little bit about the history of the project before we continue that discussion?
Well, the history of the first mention of Hacker Public Radio goes way back to a show called Radio Freak America. And I don't know if you're familiar with the freaking scene, but it was like the pre-internet sort of hacking thing, where hacking in the sense of gaining access to telecommunication systems of companies usually. And at the time, you know, international phone calls and long distance phone calls were extremely expensive. You know, we're looking now with all the recording things that we have now, it's considered free, just that you, what we assume is normal, that I'll be able to communicate with anyone anywhere in the world and have a video conference. And I'd be really annoyed if like 10 people are not allowed to join or the bandwidth stutters. Back in the day, we had to pay for stuff. So, there was a whole underground movement called phone freaking at the time. And on that, the internet was starting. And one of those groups was started to share information with hackers. So to promote hacking as and radio, well, freaking as it was at the time, hacking kind of came later. And from that, they released the show up onto the internet, and then the RSS protocol came along, and then that became an RSS feed, and the whole podcasting thing started. And then two other computer groups, one was called Binary Revolution, and they had a podcast stemming off from that called BinRev Radio, oddly enough. And they ran for a few years, and in parallel with them was Infonomicon Community Club. They had one as well. And they some of those guys had podcast incubator things where they were encouraging people to try podcasting. And a lot of people were podcasting at the time. A lot of Linux links was going as well. And TLLTS are still going strong. So those guys came up with the idea of starting a shared podcast. And one of the last things that was mentioned on Radio Free America was the idea of starting this thing called Hacker Public Radio, which is a play on the US public service called PBS. So having like a PBS service, but for hackers. And the idea there originally was that they would start a Today with a Techie show. It was around the time that Leo Laporte was starting off his network. So this was a play on words. Not very, people shouldn't really pick jokes when they're joke names when they're doing podcasts. Because anyway, so the Today with the Techie started. And the idea was that a calendar would be put up and every podcaster that was podcasting at the time would pick a day in which to release a show. And it was actually that project that I started, I got involved in, because they were saying, hey, after a while, we're going to open it up to the public so that, you know, basically anybody can send in a show. So that ran for a while. And then after 300 episodes, that basically just rebranded into Hacker Public Radio overnight. And that was the merging of the two podcasts. So BinRev Radio had stopped and Infonomicon Radio had also stopped. And the two teams came together. And I think Enigma started posting shows at that time as well. So that continued on for quite a while. And that's where Hacker Public Radio came from. So then there was a schedule sent around and basically anybody could post a show according to you pick a slot, pick a calendar and that sort of thing. So that's basically the history of HPR in essence.
Nice one. So was there any personal motivation for yourself was it the creating a forum for people to do this, or was it something that you felt you wanted to bring your own messages out there in terms of podcasting?
Well, at the time I wasn't involved in this. I'm not part of the BinRev community. I'm also not part of the Digital Dog Pound, largely because I'm not in the regions where those two computer clubs, basically, I think we would call them hackerspaces now, operate. So when they had the opportunity to, when they were doing this idea of sharing knowledge and, a common place to post shows, I thought, well, brilliant, I'll just contribute as a host. But my involvement as a janitor didn't really start for we started HPR itself, Today with the Techie, started 15 years 7 months ago today, as you hear this, and 13 years ago it was renamed, and it kind of ran for, I think I'm started to help out about 10 years ago now. Let me see. Give me one sec. Series. I was actually sponsored. So if you go to the website and go full episode guide and look for old soldiers, that was back in 2010 was when I started getting them, involved. I volunteered as a janitor to help out. So 2010, that was, I suppose it's approaching 10 years ago now. Mm-hmm. Past 10 years ago now, so fair enough. So 2010, what was happening was the number of shows coming into the queue was going down. Basically, life happened to the admins at the time. And I'm using the word admins and janitor interchangeably here. I can go into that more detail on that later if you want. But at that time, so the project was going for, you know, a good 5 years at that time, and then it started basically to pod fade a little bit, and I didn't know whether, as a host at the time, we can get a lot of feedback on when your shows were put in. Basically, just put them into on the FTP server, and they got posted or they didn't. So I had posted two shows, and they weren't coming out. So I kind of emailed the list to say, okay, what's the story? Are we going to continue with this project, or are we going to put it to bed? You know, basically, because Old Soldiers was a Lost in Bronx episode, basically how to deal with pod fading. You know, that you have if you're building up a listenership as a podcaster and you decide to stop, how is the best way to do that? So you know, you tell your audience, well, I'm intending to stop, here's the reasons why, and then you say, it'll be in so many episodes, I'm going to stop, not just, okay, this was the last episode, and you leave them high and dry. So that was, you know, and you archive your stuff, and you make sure it's up on Internet Archive and make it available to people, and you know, you don't redirect the website to different places. You know, so do you wrap up the project nicely? So I posted a question to the HPR mailing list at the time saying, okay, guys, what are we going to do? Are we going to keep this thing going? And basically, if you want, I can help out, and then or if you want, I think we should continue with this. And then Enigma says, hey, our Droops, I can't remember, one of the guys says, do you want to post the shows? Okay, fair enough. So from that moment, I got the keys to
the rest is history, as they say, I guess.
Well, yeah, but it's important to remember what it's important for me to make it clear what my role here is. And essentially, I'm a bash script that just says, hey, could you do a show on that? Could you do a show on that? And our goal has been to automate as much as possible. But the thing that you, as a, what we were called was admins, but I like to think of us as janitors. Mm-hmm. So if you go to the Hacker Public Radio website and go to the About page, there's a bit there about the HPR community and the governance of HPR. So we've got the real admin, so Josh, who has the runs the web server and stuff, he is the real admin. You know, he does the spam stuff and keeping people off,
keeping
you know, all that networky stuff is done by him. There's a surprisingly little amount of technology involved in having this website. So it's basically just a website that we post a copy of a database and put an RSS feed out, so that on a particular day it chunks out a show every day. Kind of lost my trail of thought. Oh yeah, governance. So what I tried to do was, when I started helping out, was to, number one, give feedback on every show. So have a community news episode every first, released on the first Monday of every month. Then we have a community news show. And what we do there is we go and review every episode, make sure that everybody gets some feedback on their shows. And it's invariably positive, because, you know, I can find something in every show that there's been on that have gone, okay, well, I can't see myself using that now, but I might be able to see myself using that later, or was entertaining, or made me cry, or whatever. So, or you go, good.
It made you cry in a good way or in a bad way.
Sometimes in a bad way, in that, you know, somebody is not, that episode where Sigflup was in the hospital was not a pleasant episode to listen
right,
to. So,
right.
But on the other hand, she also made me cry when she did the Cisco episode, where she took some Cisco phones and and went in, modified this firmware and stuff, and got running VoIP over these phones, and the audio was totally crap, but the enthusiasm of the you know, hey guys, I'm recording this down a VoIP form, and then here's how I did it, and I just had to recompile it from Perl and get butterflies to flutter over it to change bits of the thing. So yeah, it's you laugh, you cry. So yeah, that's it. But governance, important point was for me was to make sure that everybody got some feedback, because through feedback, you know, that's the currency of a podcaster is getting feedback. You guys know that. If you go, oh, somebody sent me an email and it's positive, that's great. That is the currency. So it's important to get feedback. The first feedback I got was on a, you know, on a show where it was some guy said, hey, that comment that you had about Ubuntu, that's completely wrong. It doesn't work like that. And I replied back, yeah, but the episode you're listening to was 2 years old. So they've fixed it since then. So yeah. That was the main thing. But it's also important to remember that I do not set the policy. I suggest the policy, or I'll bring topics up on the mailing list. But equally, other people bring topics up on the mailing list. This week has been actually very busy on the mailing list for topic discussions, but we'll cover all that in the community news. So janitors, we basically are, I am not Mr. HPR. I'm just essentially a bash script that will ask you to do shows.
Needless to say, the link for the mailing list will be in the show notes, people. So if you want to subscribe to this mailing list, you're more than welcome to. And Mr. Fallon, sorry.
Yeah.
I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there is no censorship on any episode or any content that people submit, or is there? I'm just wondering if there's a general policy, because I don't know about. And if there is, where do you draw the line, if you draw one?
So if you go to the HPR website and you go to give shows, the first thing you'll see is a list of stuff you need to know. So basically, it's a summary of the podcast. So we're going to stop as a podcast if we don't get enough shows. So I will say to you or your listeners, if somebody thinks they have written a blog post, ask yourself the question, would this make a podcast? And the answer will be yes. Yes. Will anybody be interested in it? Yes. Yes. Send it into Hacker Public Radio. But we'll come back to that. So the stuff you need to know, we don't syndicate shows. We release under CC by SA. You have permission to redistribute your show entirely, which means, you know, if you've got music on there, you need to have permission. And your show will not be moderated. So if we click down to that one.
Sorry. For the few listeners who don't know what CC by SA means, maybe you should explain this.
Oh, yeah. So
just in case.
Very good. Thanks. And thanks for pointing out. So we are here to promote sharing knowledge. And as part of that, our license is the Creative Commons license, which means that if somebody stumbles upon a piece of work that has got a Creative Commons license on it, even though there might be different variants of it, at least you know what you're allowed to do with it. So at a minimum, if it's got a Creative Commons license, you're allowed to download it. So technically, if you listen to a podcast that doesn't that has copyright or right reserves on it, or has no copyright on it at all, that work is copyright all right reserves, which means it's illegal for you to download that under I'm not a lawyer, by the way, but this is my understanding. Now obviously it would be very difficult to prove that, or it would be very difficult to argue that if somebody's putting it on the website and says, hey, please download my podcast. But that is the license. So to get around that, this Creative Commons thing has come up where the shows where you can license a work and you can say, well, I want people to listen to my stuff. And so I will go and pick a license. So let's go to the Creative Commons website. As you do. It's amazing how often I go here, actually. Creative Commons website. And there's a lovely button on there called Pick a License. And it'll tell you the various things that you're allowed to do. So if you're choosing the license, you get CC. So you can CC part is Creative Commons. By is if you see that tag associated with the work, it means you have to credit the person who, if you're redistributing it, you have to credit the person who has created it. SA means share alike. So if you download it under one of the Creative Commons licenses, you need to share it under the same license. And sometimes people put in a non-commercial clause in there. I would advise people not to do that, because that actually prevents people from, I don't know, putting it on a CD and or on a USB stick. And then if you sell that USB stick, you know, to cover the costs or to promote your project, if it contains CC BY-SA NC non-commercial stuff, then you're into a gray area. Do you need to, are you violating the terms of that person's license by doing that? So does that explain Creative Commons?
It does indeed. Thank you.
So moving back to the general Hack Republic Radio itself, about your original question is, do we moderate the shows? And the answer is no, we don't moderate your audio. We might edit your audio. We might try and improve it. We convert it to mono usually. But we don't vet, edit, or moderate or censor any audio on the show. We trust you to do that. And that's an important thing.
So if anybody wants to talk about pedophilia or drug use or any other subject that is illegal in most jurisdictions, these are just examples, but you get my drift, you wouldn't censor this at all?
No, because I don't even listen to it before it's posted. And that has two advantages. One, the history from that is, why should I censor other hackers? So I've got a hackerspace, or, you know, you can imagine a bar camp, for example, Fosdem, for example, Lightning Talks at Fosdem. I think we met at Fosdem.
We did indeed, yes.
So a Lightning Talk there, or a bar camp at Odd Camp or something like that, or you're out in the middle of a tent at one of the hack festivals. Are you going to talk about those? So you're going to go and a hacker comes along and they are my peers. So why should I have any right to say what they can and can't put on the network? That said, though, there's a happy balance there. And there was a great show done on freedom of speech and censorship done by Mirror Shades. And that basically has set our policy with regard to this, because there's a delicate balance there. So we do ask you to announce the fact that you're going to be discussing these sort of topics before, or, you know, you're going to be talking these sorts of topics. So, you know, say you want to protect, you know, minors or whoever who don't want to listen to this. So we will put that a warning on that the show itself is has got an explicit content, although that even so, the use of the word explicit is also a problem for people who find all my shows are explicit, because I go into explicit detail about this technical topic. But okay, in the iTunes version of what explicit means. But also we ask people to put a warning on it, and we ask people to give people the opportunity to turn off the radio in case there are minors, or in case they're listening in a public area or something like that. And then even making a point about pedophilia, for example, and it's a valid show about dealing with pedophilia, or some interesting aspect of it from a social worker point of view, I can imagine that would be of interest to hackers. And so long as it's wrapped up with some warnings and give people notice, then it's a perfectly acceptable show for the most part. And that show about on freedom of speech and censorship basically uses the analogy of a CD case, where the real case, you go into a CD store and there's explicit material on it. So that's what we're asking people to do. I've used that that warning on several shows. My wife and I did a show on IVF treatments, and that can be tough for some people to listen to. And also, you as a parent listening in a car, you might bring up some questions to people. So yeah,
it's a very sensible. I agree with the freedom of speech piece, and everybody has a choice to turn it on or off if they want to.
But it's important that they know that you know you have the choice, and that's what we ask. That's what we're the whole point of trust is there. So if you're if you're just out cycling and you're listening to your podcast and then you don't get this warning, you need some time to, you're listening to a show about something else and then this comes up, then there's a break of trust there. And the only thing we can do as janitors is go back later and put in the explicit warning on the show. But thankfully that hasn't happened too much.
Okay, excellent. Yeah.
And the other thing is, of course, the safe harbor thing, the fact that we don't listen to it or edit it allows us to do the safe harbor thing. Not that we've ever been told to take down a piece of work as yet.
Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned earlier that you listen to each and every show so far.
Yes.
And so my question on that is, when and where do you listen to shows and what is your day job?
I listened to every show, and if you don't, I sometimes think, hey, did I listen to every show? And sometimes I have to go back and listen to, there's a topic, and I go back to the HBR tags page, which is on the main page, and it gives you a link to all the topics that we've covered. And thanks to all the community who's gone back and added all those tags. And I think, God, did I listen to that or not? And then I play the show and I can immediately remember where I was whenever I heard that podcast or any podcast. So it's I have listened to them all. Yeah. And it's a requirement to be on the Community News Show. Well, it's not. Yeah, it's a requirement. We ask people if you're going to come on to the Community News Show that you listen to all the shows. But it's not a burden, actually, because there has not been a show that I haven't listened to from start to finish. Well, there's been a few. The snoring episode, 5150, may he rest in peace. That was one that was hard to get through. And the April Fool joke I did where I put in all the PIN numbers from 000 to 9999. So that was just more boring than anything else. But
okay.
If you've listened to how many shows is it now? 3,886 shows. Then you kind of have to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. So when do you listen to the shows normally?
So prior to COVID and lockdown, I had an hour and a half commute in the morning and an hour and a half commute in the afternoon. So that was.
Yeah.
No problem whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I also speed up my podcasts twice the speed.
At times too, okay. Yeah. Fair enough. And what is your day job, if I may ask?
My day job is I work for a large cable operator on their back end.
Right, so you're a computer guy yourself.
Yeah, my official title is video system engineer, but kind of a system engineer.
I mean, you sound Irish, but I understand that you don't live in Ireland anymore.
No, that's correct. I am Irish. But I'm also Dutch now. So,
are you you're Dutch? On my commiserations.
No, not at all. I love your country.
Sorry, full disclosure, my co-host is of Dutch origin too, but defected to the UK at some stage.
Very, very sensible. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I met my wife in the last place where I expected to meet my wife, which was in an Irish bar. So, but it's just weird as luck would have it. So she moved to Ireland for 2 years and then She works in the healthcare, and a lot of the healthcare in Ireland is run by on a voluntary basis. You know, a lot of the, unless you work in Dublin, the a lot of the treatments are Dublin based. So for the stuff that she does, anyway.
But so, she's Dutch, I suppose.
She is Dutch, yeah, although you wouldn't. She's actually the voice who does the intro and outro at the end. Does the?
All right. Yeah. I see. Okay.
She's been on quite a lot of shows as well. She's done a few shows as well. So then we did a year in England under the naive idea that if we were in a country halfway between Ireland and the Netherlands, it would be convenient for people coming over, but it just meant that we had to travel to Ireland and we had to travel to the Netherlands. So so then I said, you know, in an IT sector, you can get a job anywhere, basically. So I thought, yeah, I'll move to the Netherlands. And it proved actually more Irish in a way than living in England. It's kind of weird that way.
Hang on, you're saying that the Netherlands is more
Irish? I found more similarities.
In which aspect exactly?
Yeah, I'm
just curious now.
Well,
and which part of Holland you live in?
Yeah, ignoring the third dimension for a start, the complete and total lack of geography, other than the geography that they've made themselves. But I actually really find that, you know, it's freaky, the whole Dutch thing, right? You're walking around in a place that's 9 meters, where I work, we're like 9 meters below sea level. Meters below sea level, you'd need four people of my height standing on my shoulders and you'd still drown. But nobody passes any heat in this shirt. It's grand. It's just, we're all living here. And they have a church called the New Church, which is underwater, or, you know, under sea level, which is older than the United States of America. It's just...
You see, Ken, there's a place in Dublin called the Long Hall that might qualify for under sea level too, depending on the spot you're in the Pelican Pulp. But that's another story, I suppose.
Yeah. So, the Netherlands is... nice. The only thing is that I will warn anybody, if you come over here the first Monday of the month at 12 noon, they have this air raid siren. So you're walking, this is you, right? You're walking down the street, minding your own business. All of a sudden, goes off everywhere. And not just in one place, but everywhere. And your mobile phone is going, everybody's mobile phone is going nuts. And nobody is doing a thing. All the Dutch people are cycling along, happy out. Nobody's passing any news, and it's like you're in the. They came from another world. So yeah, it's.
But then maybe the old adage hasn't changed that the Netherlands consider themselves to be constantly under attack from foreign nations and stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
I do not know. Martin may have a comment on this.
Well, we have these neighbors, which are
yes, true,
on various sides, who think that invading us is some kind of hobby or something.
Martin, I think it's actually the other way around, and caravans do play a very important role in this.
To be fair,
but I digress.
I don't know. Have you heard the Dutch national anthem yet, Ken?
Yes.
It talks about the Spanish invasion in the 1600s. we do remember things.
Exactly. Yeah. I am of German blood. So. Okay. Yeah.
You are okay.
No, this is the Dutch national anthem.
I'm William of Orange. I'm of German.
I see. Sorry. Okay, I just got confused there. Okay, back to HPR. This is not a podcast on history, but rather on something else. Do you share statistics with any of the people who broadcast on HPR so that they have at least some sort of notion of how many people are listening. As a matter of fact, I mean, if you deploy, you say you have a search engine, you see that quite a few sites are actively scraping HPR and syndicating either unknown or not, the content you have out there, especially RSS aggregators.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I see loads more of them coming along. They come and they go. But that's what the license is. The license is Creative Commons CC by SA. And they do, because we have it, they do give attribution because we put attribution into the shows itself. So that's fine.
But you don't keep stats yourself in terms of don't provide feedback to the hosts.
The this topic has come up on the mailing list before, and this is one example where I, as a janitor, will make sure that the topic is discussed and that the requests of the community are supported. So the community wishes to know what the stats are for their shows. And you can get that by going to the Internet Archive, and basically it's listed right there for the shows.
For this particular date, where the archive actually pays you a visit, yes.
Yeah, so we serve our audio, any audio that hasn't been in the main feed comes from the Internet Archive. Any audio that hasn't been, you know, if it's on the Internet Archive, we'll take it from there. If it's not, it'll be from the HPR website itself. So Dave, my other janitor, Dave Morris, is busy at the moment going back, finishing off the last few episodes and tidying up the tags. And he's done huge amount of work also with the Internet Archive people on getting the formatting and the thing. On the Internet Archive. For example, it turns out now if you type in Hacker Public Radio, you're more likely to hit on the Internet Archive page than you are on the Hacker Public Radio site.
Are you serious?
Yeah, which is fine. And to be honest, a lot of our hosts and contributors have not even seen the website in 5 years, 10 years, because you have no reason to go there, or you just go to the upload link and you get everything via your feed. But I don't believe that stats are useful, and I'll tell you why. This is my own personal opinion. This is not the official opinion of Hacker Public Radio, which is that we give you the stats. From a security point of view, there's lots of privacy related information that is in those stats, from a GDPR point of view, got your IP address when you logged on and stuff. So you need to fiddle with them. But thankfully, the Internet Archive solved that for us, because the stats over there are more or less going to be the stats that you get. So that's it. If somebody has a request for particular stats, we put that into the mailing list and we'll get it. But my personal feeling on Hacker Public Radio, on any given show, on Hacker Public Radio is a standalone entity. And if somebody derives value of that, if only one person derives value from that, then that show is a valid show. And for that person who has driven value from it, then that to them is the best show in the world. I'll give you an example. Every time I turn on my soldering iron here, this soldering iron, I think of the Mr. X show where he taught me how to solder on a podcast. Now, I can imagine people have mentioned to me before when I've said that, they've said, how the hell can you learn how to solder on a podcast? And I imagine a lot of people turned off that episode because, I'm not going to learn how to solder from a podcast. I'll go to a YouTube video. But there you go. So who am I to judge? And if it's 4 o'clock in the morning, right, and you're stuck in a data center somewhere, and you find the HPR page with the awk command that that shows you how to transform this stupid file that you have here that's 4 gigabytes, and you need to transfer it over there, yeah, that show was of value because it saved that person's butt. And we get lots of comments on older shows that come in that, are 4 or 5 years old, they go, this really saved my butt. And quite a lot of them are from myself to my own shows that I've done, because I go, I know I heard that somewhere. And then I go back and I find out that it was a show that I recorded some years ago on HBR, telling exactly how to do it.
The initial reason for this question was basically some people are concerned about monetization of the whole thing. You see, at the moment, and I can only discuss what I can, Linux in-laws and the infrastructure behind it is actually funded by some cartels and other entities, let's put it this way. But especially Martin is hot on the idea of not only dominating the world with free and open source software, but making a good deal of money with this podcast. And this is the reason, basically, why stats are so important for at least Martin, if not myself.
Yeah, but then you don't want our stats, because our stats are too honest. What you want to do is do impressions, because... So the way I do it is, if somebody comes from an IP address within a 24-hour period for any given show, that is one view. Whereas I know of entities where they will gather every impression on a media file and put that in as a view or as a link.
Okay.
Regardless of how long, even if it's only a second, even if it's only the continuation of a block of media where somebody's fast forwarding from the start to the middle to the end, that's three impressions. And then they will also multiply that by a number, five or so, and will give you the M count, and that will be used for advertising revenue. So it's all Leo Laporte.
Where does the five has come done
some very good episodes on on subscriber count and how basically it's bull. And I find it completely.
You're saying there's an episode on this already.
I know Leo Laporte has done an episode on this. We've had this discussion on the mailing list several times. It's no harm if you want to bring it up again. We can happily have this discussion. But how do you consider what an impression is? Because you know you could argue that a particular IP address where there's 200 downloads from a particular IP address. Well, yeah, it could be that that IP address is, in the Great Wall of China. Those are 200 valid views on the other side of that wall. So yeah, you could say it's been proxied on another network. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it could be an impression. But again, from my point of view, I'm not really interested in listeners. I am interested in this, yes, yeah. But I don't care about you people. No, I am interested in turning you people into hosts on the network, even if it is only one show.
Sorry, can Leo Laporte of Twit fame?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Leo Laporte back in the day, and it would be in the day now, did a on one
host. I see.
I can't remember. I'll try and root it out for you. He has done, when he was starting up his the Twit network, he was very open about how much money they made, the impressions that when they were discussing with advertisers. So you know, if you've got those magazines on the couch, they will. You know, if you've got a subscription to a magazine, Flowers or Us or something, yeah. The monthly magazine to show you how to cut your flowers. And the advertisers in that will be told, even though they've only got 1,500 physical prints, they will say, oh, well, those 1,500 things are sitting in a doctor's office. So each one of those magazines is viewed on the coffee table of a doctor's office 200 times. So they'll take the numbers and multiply that out, the number of impressions. So it's all like, pick a number. Which is why I don't find it interesting. What I do find interesting, though, is the relationship between people who use a thing and subscribe to a thing. And that is, NPR in America have done a breakdown, and it's about somewhere around the 1% voluntarily give back to a project. So I don't know, if you ever listen to YouTube or other podcasters, you know, if only one person gave a dollar for, if I only had a dollar for everybody who downloaded this episode, you know, I'd be a millionaire. Yeah, exactly. Mm. You would be. But, you know, that's not how the world works.
You aren't.
One, you can expect feedback of about 1%. Yeah. So given the number of subscribers that we have, I would have expected a lot more people coming in. So that's then there's a bridge there. There's a number of the number of subscribers we have, the number of listeners we have. If we get 1% of that, that's the number of hosts that we should have in the year. So say if we have about 3,500, 4,000 people per show, we should have, I don't know, 40 hosts per year.
I'm guessing.
But also, that counts as a lot more than that.
Anyway, Ken, just curious, do people promote Patreon and the likes on their shows on HPR? Speaking of monetization.
Well, here's the thing, right? The HPR, the Hacker Public Radio, is being paid for out of the pocket of Josh Knapp, one of our hosts, Josh. So he has a business, anhonesthost.com. And if you're looking for serious hosting from somebody who, and this is an advertisement.
Absolutely appreciate it.
Personal recommendation.
A real one.
It's a real one. Josh knows his stuff. And when he says an honest host, he means if you buy this amount of bandwidth, you're going to get this amount of bandwidth. I'm not going to oversubscribe and do all sorts of tricks. So, and he's a good guy and he does know his stuff. I mean, he's kept us in the air for quite a while. And the other people that we have is the hosting from the Internet Archive, which is an excellent project, where they are basically they're acting as the Internet's library, and their data servers are maintained voluntarily. So I subscribe, I donate to them on a monthly basis as well. So there's nothing to stop you saying, hey, subscribe to my Patreon within your account, but it would be within the context that the actual media has been served by these two people, either the Internet Archive or Josh. Yeah. And that also, you know, if you go to something like Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or I don't know, Google Podcasts or what, Apple's iTunes or whatever, and you play an HBR episode there, that data is not coming from their servers. That data is coming from our servers. It's Josh who's paying for that, or it's the Internet Archive who's paying for that. Don't
be
under any doubt as to who exactly is paying for that. Yeah. But to be honest, a lot of the... we have people who financially contribute to HPR in the sense that... we have these booth kits that go around. And so the idea there is you got free open back in the day. When I were a lad, you could go to a meeting and you didn't have to wear no mask. So
ancient times.
Ancient times, you know, where people could actually be within 1.5 meters of each other and share a pint and breathe into somebody's face, shout into their ear.
Gone.
Anyway, back in those days, we had a booth kits. So we have a booth kit in the States, and we've got a booth kit here, and it contains a audio recorder and stickers and pamphlets and HBR logos and stuff. And I recently got some Free Software Foundation Europe stickers and that sort of thing. And it's basically a booth kit. So we go and we'll ask at... I don't know, Ohio Linux Fest or OddCamp
FOSDEM.
FOSDEM, we were lucky to get a table last year. Yeah, it was actually last year, so that was brilliant. But we're there as a community. So if there's any swag, that's paid for by, you know, volunteers. So I only need to go to the mailing list and say, guys, somebody send me on some stickers, or I'll get them myself, or pay for the... pay for the banners and domain hosting and stuff like that. But, you know, it's not worth the hassle dealing with the financial, you know, getting donations and all that sort of thing. Just send us, you know, if we need stickers, we'll ask and
Definitely run by volunteers. Yeah.
And the tables are cool because, you know, at the FOSDEM table, that was brilliant. FOSDEM, I usually went around and interviewed all the kind of hallway tracks. It's kind of the hallway tracks that we do. So if somebody's at an event in OLF or somewhere in America or wherever, and you're never going to be able to get there, then a HPR host will go around, record people, you know, on the hallway track. Oh, I'm at the Linux in those guys. How are you doing? What do you think of the episode? What do you think of the show? And what would you recommend seeing? Blah, blah, blah. And then that comes up as a show. And we did that quite successfully for FOSDEM for a few years. And those audio then are on the FOSDEM website. So that captured the whole feel of walking around to the Debian booth and to the Free Software Europe booth and all the other places. So that's kind of cool. But last year we asked every year for a booth, but I felt like the whole idea behind FOSDEM anyway is that you want to they want to encourage more people to mingle, so they don't, you know they'll have a database room as opposed to a Postgres room, so they're always trying to cross-pollinate things. So we submitted a proposal for a podcast. They're free. It's on the main HPR website, actually, if you go to there. It's the, and the site is down now because I'm currently moving it to another one, Free Culture Podcasts Network. And that is basically any podcast, anything, a list of podcasts that are active that are released under a Creative Commons license. So we put that in there and I have a link. And then on the day we had like an A4 brochure listing the podcasts, so that, you know, if you're into, you mightn't be into HPR, but you might very well be into metal music. So the open metal cast is right up your street, that sort of thing. So
I can recall you giving this out at FOSDEM, and
yes,
I if I'm not completely mistaken, I saw this at an Occam too in the UK.
Yes,
but yes, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I mean, no, it's I really like this FOSDEM thing, because a FOSDEM, for the few listeners who do not know FOSDEM, kids, back in the olden days when people could still meet, you're looking at a gathering in Brussels where about, the official version is anything between 6,000 and 8,000 people would gather over a weekend and discuss open source software, not just from a technical but also from a political and philosophical perspective. More realistically, I reckon we were looking at anything between 10,000 and 12,000 people, and the hallway tracks, besides the official kind of schedule, are the most important things, because you get to meet people there. As a matter of fact, this is basically where I ran into Ken Fallon first time around, and kind of pitched the idea of something called Linux In-Laws on HPR. In fact,
the first, the second talk that I attended after going to FOSDEM for about 4 years was this year when it was online. Prior to that, I was just too busy going around recording the whole thing. Somebody's got a Yagi antenna pointing it up, and you go, okay, what's this? And then they're talking to you, and you go, hold on now, let me take out my recorder, because this is just too interesting. Okay, hi, who are you? What's this about? What are you doing here? Yeah, it's really cool.
Nice. So it wasn't the case that Chris was actually stalking you at FOSDEM.
Martin, I never stalk people at FOSDEM. You should know this.
I wanted to ask a bit about the hosts that you have and how they... I know you're always asking for shows, and I can see a lot of different topics on the shows. But is there something you'd like to encourage people to say about encouraging people to go onto HPR and do a show, or is there a specific show that you would say, listen to this one, because this is how it's really done, excluding the Linux In-Laws, obviously, but and then that should inspire people perhaps to do a show. Is there something like that you can point people at?
I don't know. I don't know what floats your boat. And I would say, actually, no, don't listen to somebody else. Don't try to get perfect audio. Don't set the bar too high for yourself. Your first show is going to be shit anyway. Just the sooner you send it in, the better. And we can all forget about it. It's the best show you can do, especially if you're a long-time listener, is, hi, I'm a long-time listener. I've been listening to HBR since blah. Who am I? You know, basically this thing. Who am I? It's like as if you walk into a hackerspace and you've got this HBR. If you imagine HBR as this hackerspace, you get this whole group of people that we know exist. And then you got this massive 35,000 people who we don't know exist. So send us a show in just to introduce yourself. It's just, you don't come into somebody's house and just go, hi, I'm at a party, and they don't say hello. You know, just say hello. That's show number one. Then, of course, Dave and I will listen to your show and we'll go, hey, you got into use this 8-bit microcomputer and you just happened to mention that in passing. Come on, do a show about that. Oh, and then we hook you in. That's how we do it.
Yeah.
And then we listen to that show and we tell you to submit other shows. And then you become a regular, and then you're doomed. You become a podcaster. But don't, HBR, we have this whole golden motto. And one of them is, FLAC is the best, but we'll accept the rest. So we do want perfect audio. Who doesn't? You know, you don't want to be listening to crap audio. But at the same time, you know, if you're have the opportunity, you're in a bus and Linus Torvalds happens to be sitting there next to you and he's willing to take an interview. And the only thing that you have is your crappy MP3 player, yeah? That audio is going to be better than no audio. So that, mm-hmm. you know, let's put things into context, because, you know, yeah. And then another thing I read this week, Mike, one of our longtime hosts, says he doesn't submit shows because he's afraid other people might know more about it. And I go, what?
Yes, there's always going to be someone who's going to know more about it.
Yeah,
there always is, of course. Yes.
We have Klaatu, who does the GNU World Order, and he is basically going through all the packages in the Slackware, so essentially all the packages on the Linux distro. And for some of the applications, he will openly admit, I have no clue what this does, and you can hear like man space command. And then he reads it out. Okay, this is what it is. And this is what it does. And I don't know why you would use that. And then blah, blah. And then 2 weeks later, there's feedback from some dude who has an old blah, blah, blah computer and runs a tape deck. And this is the basis of their inventory. And you know, they have no money to update this tape deck. And their entire business is relying on it. And this command is very, very important to them. Yep. So like, I did one show, right, where we were short of shows, and I give a tip on how to tell your left earbud from your right earbud by putting a knot in it. And that was basically just a call for shows. But it is extremely useful, actually. It's a good tip. And that spawned three different shows where people sent in other tips on how to introduce tactile feedback to the keyboard and to their mic and other things. So it gets people thinking. My job is to lower the bar so much that people will want to submit shows. I don't even know if that answers the question. And as far as the hosts are concerned, I have this weird thing where we've been running so long, I guess, and that two of our hosts I know have passed away. Maybe more of them have, but Lord Dragonblood passed away from cancer, and 5150 passed away. He was a very good, very committed to HBR, and as was Lord D. And the weird thing was that we had known him by his both of them, actually, by their handles. And then all of a sudden, a real name comes out, you know. And this whole, for these people, there's a whole other part of their life that hasn't been associated with HBR. So, you know, I've been, a kind of point I'm trying to make is, you know, on the internet, nobody knows you're a cat. So I was at Art Camp one day, and I was just sitting at the breakfast table, not feeling Mae West, you know yourself. And I heard something.
Do I?
It's
okay. No details, Christopher, please.
You've been to Ireland, right? You've seen Irish people the following morning.
I've lived there for about 8 years, yes.
Yes, I think you very well know what I mean. If you haven't experienced it yourself, you've seen other people living it. But anyway, turns out, you hear a fellow podcaster, and you know, yeah, but you don't look like that, you know? So it's kind of weird not knowing who your hosts are.
Joe Resig comes to mind, that. Yes?
Yeah.
Ken, just wondering, HPR seems to have quite a few regulars on the schedule, yeah. Like Klaatu, like Anonymous, like other people come to mind. What do you think, or what would be the ratio between regulars and once-off, or people who just produce shows very irregularly, let's put it this way, as in once in a blue moon?
And the quick answer to that is not enough. We don't have enough drive-by hosts. So if in the morning everybody who listens to HBR submitted a show, for a start, we would have enough shows for the next 10 to 15 years. But if everybody did that, then we have 260 slots per year. So that's not really a lot. But of those, about a half or more would be done by regular hosts.
Half of them, okay.
Yeah, or more. And that's a bad statistic from my point of view. Because, I want the situation where you're fighting to get a slot.
And there's no such thing as an ideal show length either, is there? I think I've seen some really short ones and some very long ones. I think you mentioned 24 hours. But...
exactly. The thing, there's no limit on what the content can be. There's no limit about what the topic is. You know, it can't be spam. It can't be spam. And it has to be, you got to be, of interest to hackers. But then again, if you're doing it, then right there, you've got 50% of the hackers that you need. So you only need one more person to be interested in what you're talking about for it to be of interest to hackers. And as yet, I haven't come across a show that I didn't find interesting. So, that whole bar is covered right there.
Ken, just wondering, define spam in an HBR context.
Would be like art.
You're not referring to the food stuff then.
Yeah, I'll know it when I see it. what we have not had any. Well, we've had loads of common spam. And even some good common spam. And I will say, if you are a spammer, please do a show on HPR about that whole technology, that whole field. That would be absolutely awesome. I'd love to hear about the motivation, why you do this, the things that, the issues that you come across, how you get around blog sites, what exploits you use.
Ken, you can only do so many shows on canned meat, no?
Yeah, exactly. Ah, you could. You could make a series. But what I tend to do is I'll just listen to it. And there have been one or two occasions where we've had a comment spam come in where it's been dodgy as to whether it is or not. And what I'll do on that occasion is send it to the mailing list and say, okay, I think this is spam. What do you think?
Okay.
I go by consensus at that point. If I have a show and I'll fast forward through it and there's words like Linux and stuff, maybe it'll get posted before I realize it. But more often than not, I'll be more attentive to new hosts than regular hosts.
I'm just curious, never attempt to post shows by bots or something?
Bots don't tend to post shows, no. They do post comments, and the dead giveaway is, hey, this was an excellent article. It's not an article, it's a show, so,
Apart from the Selenium scripts I wrote to automate the upload process. Yes, which brings me actually to a kind of minor, tiny question. There was some nutter proposing an API a few moons back. Unfortunately, yes. There hasn't been much progress on this. I'm just, and subsequently, this nutter had to resort to other kind of more mechanical devices like set Selenium scripts. I'm just wondering if there will be ever an API where you can simply include this upload process in your podcasting producing workflow.
I think that the person who's requesting this is unique in HPR land because
fair enough. Because it does happen.
No, I get it. Other hosts who post regularly do it differently. They go through the process. But I've been thinking, whenever I get time, in that mythical land where there is time, there is kind of a few things that we are planning on doing with HPR. One of them will not be done until I move, doing some renovation in the house and stuff. So after that's done, later on this year. So one of the things that we would like to do is move the entire site to a text-based, static site generated.
Like Hugo or Penguin or something like this.
Something like, it'll be something Python-y because anything that we do in HPR, we are a long-tail project. So if we get volunteers coming to the project, their minimum commitment is they have to be willing to support whatever it is they are contributing in terms of code for a minimum of 2 years. And the reason for that is, like, we've been going for 15 years, so it's a long-term commitment here in HPR. And if you decide, if the contribution is brilliant, whatever, but if anything happens to you or you decide not to continue it, then other janitors have to come in and take over the maintenance of that code, and we're already flooded. Because the main thing that we do is try and get new shows, trying to get people to submit shows. That is the main thing that we do, which is another reason why if you meet somebody and you come across a topic, always have in the back of your mind, would that be an interesting HPR episode? And lots of people will say no, but if 10% of those people say yes, then we have a new host. And if we can get them to submit one show, it's possible we can get them to submit two shows, et cetera, et cetera. So that, keep that in mind. However, if we go to a static site generated website, my kind of view is, then we put in a distributed, we have like something perhaps like a NoSQL database. Not a NoSQL database, but an SQL-like database. So the website itself for the upload and the spam and whatever, that's a separate thing that will continue to be a LAMP stack. But for the rest, I'm thinking of a sort of Git-like thing where you can edit your shows using GitLab instance or GitLab instance or our, GitLab-ish instance, GitHub-ish instance. That way, if you want to go in and edit your show notes, you can, and we know it's you because you've got to log in and the system knows it's you because it's you. And that way, perhaps we can upload shows that way as well. Then it becomes like just a Git workflow that you submit shows, and then we need to treat it like a pull request, basically. That's kind of
the topic. Very good.
Somebody wants to work with me on that at some point. Bearing in mind, I've been saying this for ages, but.
No, very good to hear.
And then the whole point is I want to be able to take that database so that anybody can replicate it. And then, good luck trying to DDoS us because everybody's got a copy of the database and everybody can just check Git, check out their version, and or sync the media, and boom, you've got this distributed network. And again, like you were saying earlier, all these other people are syndicating your content. Great. Now syndicate the database, syndicate the common system. So
I mean, good to hear, because the lag that I'm kind of tech supporting has made this move about 2 weeks ago. We were running Moin Moin, which is a Python-based CMS, and that, given the fact that the Python 3 port is nowhere near completion with regards to being able to run on Python 3, we decided to abandon the idea of continuing Moin Moin and went for Yugo, which is a static site generator, and that is basically combined with a Gitea instance. So essentially, it's that workflow that you're describing. You simply basically whoever has a token or login access to that site can submit a pull request. This is then approved, and then as part of an automated workflow, once your pull request is accepted, you simply put in a hook that essentially regenerates the static HTML, and that works flawlessly.
Perfect. I look forward to your show on that. In fact, to a series.
Let the in-laws work on this, yes.
Because I would really like you to do something like that, but like take it as a pet shop or something. You know, doesn't have to be a HPR, but take it as a static website, and try and keep it as simple, just bare bones as possible.
You mean that my Selenium script are basically will be a thing of the past? Excellent.
Yeah,
can't wait.
I really want to go to a stage where people have their own. I don't know who you are. It's some of the fundamental things that HPR stand for is kind of the whole anarchy, in the sense that we don't want rules. The only rule really is the one show a day, 5 days a week, and that rule is currently up for discussion on the mailing list, and it's good that it is. As a contributor, as a HPR member, not as a janitor at the moment, my feeling on it is that we should release every weekday, Monday to Friday, because you have consistency. And you know, if you turn on the radio in the morning and the news isn't there at 9 o'clock, you know, your friendly weather guy isn't there telling you what the traffic situation is, then you lose trust in that network. So that's one thing. But a lot of guys and a lot of podcasts, especially when we started, there was no, the joy of podcasting back in the day was, hey, the show can have F words in it. Great. My show can be 4 hours long today, and I'll release another one in 4 weeks' time, and RSS will just pick it up. And we're keeping a lot of that on HPR, and it's important, I think, that we do.
Nice. Yeah. So I was gonna kind of follow on from that. Is you know, I don't know about you, but it sounds. I get the impression that podcasting is becoming more and more
mainstream.
Martin,
we are obviously not for the youngsters, but
Martin, are you implying we are mainstream now? Oh God,
I don't think so. But I mean, you've done this for, well, not yourself, but HPR has been going for 15 years. How do you see this ending up in the next, I'll say 10-15 years?
It's kind of funny, as I said earlier, it's a long-term project, and you see stuff come and you've seen stuff go. You've seen, you know, what goes around comes around. And we're in a situation now where a lot of people are, you know, there's a lot of podcasts out there, and there's a lot of air quotes competition. So we are going to see a hit in the subscriber numbers, which we have. And also the COVID has hit the subscriber numbers. So it's
in a bad way or in a good way?
Yeah, it's going to, Dar over there on the, if you go to the HPR Twitter feed, there's a HPR statistics. So we've got 40, we were steadily growing from around, say, 2017, up until the start of the pandemic. We went from 25,000 to 40,000 subscribers a month. You know, steady growth, up and down.
Wow.
And we've seen that now plateau in the last year or two to around 35,000. So are gaining subscribers at the same rate as we're kind of losing. But that's down to the COVID. I mean, that's down to the COVID, Jason. Because I don't have a 3-hour commute anymore.
You don't commute,
so you know, I've got a queue of podcasts. I'm working or I'm doing tech support for the kids or I'm going out for my mandatory walk with my wife. Not that life's different. I don't have as much downtime, wasted time. So that's the thing. And then you have things like the BBC. You're releasing a lot of shows shows that they, and even the national broadcasters here and the national broadcasters are, in order to be relevant, they're spinning off lots of shows that are relatively niche into the podcasting realm. And that's great, which is, you know, it's funny because I was in Merck and one of the managers came up to me and goes, "Hey, Ken, there's this cool thing, podcasting. Have you heard about it?" I took up my HPR business card and get, "Yeah, we've been running for 15 years. You youngsters."
Oh, brilliant.
But it's good. It's good. Because, you know, again, back in the day, it was kind of this rebel melee thing. And then that went to, how do we monetize it? And, you know, I got to monetize it. I'm producing 50 shows a week and basically living in my mom's basement, which is absolutely fine, of course. But, you know, that was the thing, how to monetize it. And now national broadcasters need to do it in order to stay relevant. So, yeah. But then again, there comes a point where you're listening to all these shows, or I had at least a point where I'm listening to all these shows and I think, well, I can contribute. How do I contribute back? I've got all this excellent knowledge from people. How do I contribute back? And podcasting yourself is a way to do that, particularly on HBR. If you have something that's relevant, then you submit it here because we go on the Internet Archive, and that's got a. The whole point of the archive project is, which is an interesting thing if you do some research on what they've done, they're replicating the archive in multiple places. And hopefully, you know, if Armageddon comes, the recordings of your voice and HPR will be there forever. And when the aliens come along to figure out what it was, they'll be tuning into the Linux and those going, "Yeah, I can see why this planet was destroyed."
Fair enough.
So Ken, finally, before we wrap this up, because we have to in a few minutes, because we don't want to kind of break the 2-hour mark, I suppose, any final call to action?
Yes, I need you to submit shows, the people listening, and I need you, if you think that you can't submit a show because, I don't know, English isn't your first language or you've got a speech impediment or whatever, then write the script for us. And we have a team of highly paid professionals who will narrate that for you and submit it as your show. That's another problem. If you are, just keep in the back of your mind, is this a HBR show? Act as a scout for HBR and have a listen, because keeping the show, the feed calendar full, that's a full-time job. And if we have scouts out there helping us to do that, that would be great. And another thing is we don't have a Wikipedia entry. And the reason for that is we have, how many hosts? All the people who are technical in nature are barred from doing that because they've all submitted shows to HBR and they're no longer allowed to do that.
So, no, I mean, this is the important bit, people.
Yeah, we've got 324 people.
If you can manage to put in references that point to HBR of good quality on good quality websites, finally, Wikipedia will accept the entry. The entry is there. It just needs a few more references, and then it's good to go. Then the editors will decide that this is worth publishing. Okay. I tried myself about a year ago, or maybe 1.5 years ago, but the links simply weren't there. So the feedback that I got basically was, if you can provide more quality links, we think about publishing this Wikipedia entry. I reckon it's about 97% complete. All we are missing is a good few backlinks to HBR. Of quality sites coming from quality sites, and then we're there. And Ken, to your first point, absolutely. I mean, just Linux Inlogs is probably the best example. About almost over, slightly over a year ago, we were a little unknown heard of podcast. Now we are getting offers for TV shows. Cartels hunt us with regards to kind of, I can't really talk about the details, but there's a lot of money involved. Never mind global syndication rights, people. Think about it. It only took a year. Jokes aside.
We do have on the about page.
But bottom line is actually HPR is the place to be. That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely. On the about page of HPR, there are references to where we've been published in news articles and print media and stuff like that. So
cool. Ken, that has been more than wonderful. And we would love to talk for hours, but yes, but unfortunately we're working on the time budget. Thank you very much for being on this. I'm dead sure that this won't be the last show that the Linux In-Laws will do on HPR. So stay tuned and thank you for your time. And of course we are happy to be on HPR.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks a lot, Ken, for all the great work.
Yes, we do have feedback.
We do. It's great. Someone called Brian.
In Ohio, if I'm completely mistaken.
Yeah, it's slightly confusing whether it suggests he's not from Ohio, he's just temporarily visiting. Or
Brian, if you're listening, please do get in touch. The email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. Oh. You don't have to post a comment on HPR, but you can.
He just got in touch, anybody.
Yes, indeed.
You want him to come in touch again?
No, basically he posted this on HPR. Brian, for a more personal approach, which is of course always appreciated, the email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu, but of course, posting comments on Hacker Public Radio is fine as well. Don't get me wrong. So, well, Martin, why don't you read out the feedback?
What a good idea. Yes. So, Brian, not Brian from the Life of Brian, I think. But anyway, Brian, a topic is free speech. And he says, so free speech is okay unless the FSFE decides it's not okay. Except for RMS's quirky behavior, he was never accused of doing anything illegal. He was merely exercising his right endowed by our creator of free speech. His only fail was not realizing that the Thorpe police had invaded the FSF down with Big Brother. So,
Brian, fair point. Indeed. Right. No, Martin, of course, he's absolutely spot on. It's all about free speech. So if you want to endorse pedophilia, I'm just saying that as an example, you are free to do so, of course. But as pedophilia implies, there is a certain, what's what I'm looking for?
Legality?
Common law. Sense.
Yeah, well, there's common sense and then there's legality, right?
Yes, not to bring up certain subjects in certain contexts. And if the track record of a certain Richard M. Stallman, never mind the historical records are anything to go by, he didn't endorse pedophilia, but what he said came very close to this. My personal interpretation of the matter, I need to say, but links, of course, will be in the show notes. But even just from an ethical perspective, and this is exactly what the FSF and the certain parts of the FSF and the FSFE in particular basically objected to. It's simply not on. You see, you do not make jokes about dead people. There's reason for this. Similar, you don't endorse pedophilia.
What's wrong with making jokes about dead people?
You don't do it.
Well, they're not going to hear it, are they? So
correct, but you see, the people who still
I'm
live
sure they won't mind either.
May object to this.
Oh, the people, yes, that's fair. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Well, not all of them, but certain people will. So it's about basic social protocols that may have been violated here. And even the thought of this, and this has nothing to do with thought police, I might add. It's simply not on. So, of course, Richard M. Stallman claimed that he's suffering from some sort of autism. Mm. Fair enough. Mm. Even if this is not a pretext, that's only a lame excuse. As at least that's what it's coming across like. And sorry, this is not really on. Of course, this is my personal opinion. Martin may disagree, but in the broader social context, remarks like this, that won't fly. And that's exactly what many people have reacted to. Of course, we are talking about a democracy here, so everybody is free to voice their own opinion, goes without saying. But quite a few people have objected, have voiced their objection on place like GitHub, and that's exactly what happened within the FSFE. And that has nothing to do with Big Brother or the thought police. No, it's basic moral standards here.
Well, it's moral standards, as you say, are fitting in with the society you live in, right? If you, it's well and good saying that free speech has to be completely free and nothing else matters. But if you're operating within the society, you have to abide by the.
That's exactly it.
The legal rules, but also the unwritten rules, right?
Yes. We are marked as explicit for a reason on Hacker Public Radio, because we do say things that might offend people. But if my myself is correct, we've never really endorsed pedophilia. Or do we, Martin?
No, that wouldn't go past
no.
our own thought police, that's for sure.
And that's exactly it. We may imply unionism with vampires and all the rest of it, but there's a certain threshold that we normally do not cross.
Communism.
We may make jokes about certain topics, but for example, we do not endorse pedophilia. It goes without saying, at least not in a serious context. Mm-hmm. And I think that we should leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm sure that people may comment should they wish to. That is our
and
opinion,
of course,
indeed.
Exactly. If you disagree, feel free to send mail to /dev/null. No, of course not. The email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu.
This is the Linux Inlaws.
You come for the knowledge,
but stay for the madness.
Thank you for listening.
This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, Tab Attribution Share Alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for the song Salute Margot, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under Creative Commons at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts. Ever wondered what my beloved co-host gets up to when nobody's listening? Is it peddling contraband to cartels in Central America? Wholesale weapons dealing? Or organizing coke supply chains on the global level? Stay tuned and find out yourself.
Yeah. What is this? Yes, it is.
Shocking, isn't it? Semi-pro whistling and humming. Who'd thought of that? But wait, there's more. Now for the grand finale.
Is that on thingy cloud? Thingy cloud, where is thingy cloud? Oh, there it is. Got it. Okay. Fine. Screen.
You see, Martin, it's not enough to increase the login level. You have to take a look at the logs, too. I'm just saying.
That's a good idea. Why didn't I think of that?
You know what the latest craze is? I just found out the other day, because the federal idiots are running the show now.
Okay.
You heard about this, right?
No.
The individual federal states, and listen to this, passed a law.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Passed an emergency legislation.
Ooh.
that gives Berlin more power. In terms of really cracking down on local level with regards to school openings, barbershops, shops in general, and all the rest of it.
Sensible.
Now, but you see, it's a federal state. It's not the UK. There's a difference. It's a federal country, rather.
We have these weird splinter groups as well, like Wales and Scotland.
Not even coming close, Martin.
It's just the worst.
Okay. Now, my local gym demands an attestation from a doctor so that I can get in.
Okay.
And this is coming directly from Berlin.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.